Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Mahabharat character series. Today we are coming to the last session on Bhishma. In the previous class we discussed about how Bhishma fell on the 10th day after a gallant war and how till his last moment he was trying to do the welfare of Duryodhana, Karna, by beseeching them to end the hostilities, but they did not pay any attention. Then the war went on. After 18 days, the whole Kaurava army was annihilated. Bhima killed Duryodhana. And then whatever Pandava warriors remained, they were slaughtered ruthlessly in the night by Ashwatthama. So Bhishma Parva, as I mentioned, was the 6th Parva. Then for the next 5 days, Drona was the commander. That is the Drona Parva, 7th Parva. Then the 8th Parva was Karna Parva. In 16th and 17th days of the war, he was the commander. Then Shalya Parva is the 9th Parva, wherein for one day, the 18th day, he was the commander. Then Sauptik Parva, that is the 10th Parva, in which Saupta means sleeping. So while sleeping, the warriors were killed very terribly, brutally, heartlessly by Ashwatthama. Then after that, the 11th Parva is the Stri Parva, which depicts the lamentation of the women of both the sides, for they had lost their husbands and children and brothers and even their fathers. And then after that, so in all these, Bhishma does not play any role. And we will discuss the events in this Parva when we are discussing the later characters. We are focusing right now on Bhishma. So after this, the 12th and the 13th Parvas, Bhishma again plays a very central role. So the 12th Parva is the Shanti Parva and the 13th Parva is the Anushasan Parva. In these two Parvas, Bhishma gives elaborate instructions to Yudhishthir while being on an arrow bed himself. So the image that we see behind, that is Bhishma on the arrow bed, illuminating the most exhaustive and amazing wisdom, one of the most exhaustive and amazing wisdoms that the world has ever seen, and especially from such a painful situation, he transcends all pain and he shows the path to dharma and ultimately to transcendence for all of humanity, for all time to come. So in this Sauptik Parva, Yudhishthir is devastated. He, even in the beginning, he had some second thoughts about the war. And after the war ends, and especially when even all the Pandavas' 5 sons are killed, and practically all the warriors on the side of the Pandavas also die, Yudhishthir is extremely filled with remorse. And then when they are performing the final rites, Kunti tells Yudhishthir that please perform the last rites, please offer water in the Ganga for Karna also, because he was your older brother and he has no surviving family member to do that. This is a devastating blow for Yudhishthir to think that he along with his brothers had killed their eldest brother. Just couldn't tolerate it. And as Yudhishthir sees all around the lamentations rending the earth and rending the sky, he feels that he and his desire for the kingdom are responsible for it all. And he resolves to leave the kingdom behind, to renounce the world and go to the forest, feeling that that is the only way he can do atonement for the grievous bad karma that he has done. And when he expresses this resolve, he tells the Pandavas, "Oh Bhima, you can become the king and I am leaving for the forest." The Pandavas are aghast to hear this and everybody starts counseling Yudhishthira. Although all the 4 brothers are younger, they try their best to counsel Yudhishthira. Draupadi speaks. Then, because it is a very sobering occasion and so many warriors have been killed, so many rishis have also come over there. So Vyasadeva speaks, and the many other sages speak and try to pacify Yudhishthir. Krishna himself speaks, but Yudhishthir is not pacified. And finally, then Krishna tells Yudhishthir that go and seek guidance from Bhishma. He alone will be able to help you see the light of true wisdom. At first, thinking of Bhishma causes Yudhishthir's heart to sink further, deeper into the abyss of gloom. Because he thinks that, oh, my grandfather is suffering, lying on an arrow bed because of me, because of my greed for the kingdom. How can I even go and face him? But Krishna reassures him that Bhishma is profoundly wise. Bhishma is his greatest well-wisher, and Bhishma will be the right person to seek counsel at such a time. And Bhishma, who had throughout his life cherished the Pandavas, ever since he had seen them first, after they returned back, he would not be happy if Yudhishthira renounced the kingdom like this. So at least he had to go, Yudhishthira should go and consult him. And Krishna, when he speaks this, he speaks it so persuasively that Yudhishthira agrees. And Yudhishthira not only agrees to go and see Bhishma, but he agrees even to wear royal robes, to have himself coronated as the king. So why does he do that? For the pleasure of Bhishma. Now Bhishma had the benediction of Ichchamrityu. Whenever he desired, at that time death would come upon him. Now, Vyasadev comes much earlier and tells Satyavati, when Bhishma is still there, when Bhishma is still not so old, and when the Pandavas and Kauravas are not yet born, at that time Bhishma comes and tells Satyavati that now the dark age of Kali is coming, and therefore many inauspicious things will happen. It is best that you retire from this world. And Satyavati retires at that time. And from that time onwards, Bhishma is aware that things are heading towards a disastrous, catastrophic flashpoint. And he endures agonizingly the many injustices that are perpetrated on his beloved grandsons, the Pandavas. At any time, Bhishma could have retreated. Bhishma could have decided, enough, I have done my part, now I will depart from this world. Why did Bhishma stay on? For a valiant person to see anyone suffering is against the core of what the person stands for. And especially, that is the duty of Kshatriyas, for anyone, for every citizen. The very word Kshatriya means Kshatatrayate, one who protects others from Kshata, hurt. And so this applies for everyone, every citizen. Any citizen is suffering, the Kshatriya cannot tolerate that. And what to speak of somebody who is one's own relative, and not just an ordinary relative, a relative who is very cultured, very respectful, very gentle, very virtuous, very noble. How much more dear such a person will be to the heart. And to see such a person suffering and to not be able to do anything to stop that suffering, how painful it would be for a Kshatriya. So that was the pain that Bhishma underwent when the Pandavas were exiled. Why did Bhishma go through all this? He could very easily have just taken the benediction of Ichchamrityu and departed from the world. Bhishma waited because he knew that dharma would eventually triumph, that the virtuous would eventually be successful, and he wanted to wait to see that glorious day when the Pandavas would be enthroned as the kings, when Krishna would be glorified and Krishna's devotees would be glorified. And that's why he tolerated all those tribulations. And now Yudhishthir knew that for the sake of the pleasure of Bhishma, he would dress himself in opulent, magnificent royal dress. Normally, if a person is sick and is about to die, now when the relatives go to meet that person, they won't dress in opulent royal dresses and go. It is a very sobering occasion. So Yudhishthir knew that going to Bhishma is a sobering occasion. Yet, he dressed opulently because there's a higher purpose over there. The higher purpose was the pleasure of Bhishma. He had always wanted that his grandsons be glorified, attain the glorious position of the emperors of the world, and it was his dream. Just as the father's dreams live on through their sons or the children in general, similarly the grandfather's dreams live on through the grandsons. So now those dreams were going to be fulfilled, and Yudhishthir wanted to do all that he could to ensure that Bhishma's dreams were fulfilled. So after Yudhishthir was coronated, he went to the palace where Krishna was staying, and there when he entered, to his amazement, he saw Krishna sitting in a yogic posture of meditation with eyes closed, with head erect, with a divine peace emanating from his face, a gentle smile on his face, eyes closed, lost to this world. And Yudhishthir folded his hands and he said, "Oh, how amazing it is that you who are the sustainer of the world, you who are the object of those who enter the fourth state of meditation, fourth state of consciousness, are now yourself situated in that fourth state of consciousness." What is this fourth state of consciousness? Our consciousness can be in four states. The normal waking state is called as Jagriti, where we are right now, aware of the world around us. Then there is a second stage which is called a Swapna, when the consciousness is rooted through the subtle body, but it doesn't come to the gross body. We are souls. Around the souls, we have two coverings. One is the subtle body, which is made of, the Bhagavad Gita 7.4 tells that it is made up of mind, intelligence and false ego. And then around that, there is a second covering, that is the gross body, which is what we see around us, which is what we call as our body normally. So, when the soul's consciousness is rooted through the subtle body, through the gross body, and it comes to the outer world, that is called as the state of Jagruti, when we are aware of the outer world. When the soul's consciousness is rooted to the subtle body, but is not rooted to the gross body, and therefore it doesn't go to the outer world, that state is called as the state of Swapna. That means when we are sleeping, we are conscious, but we are not conscious of the world around us. We are not conscious of the bed we are lying on. We are not conscious of the color of the ceiling. We are not conscious of if there is a fragrance or an odor in that room. What are we conscious of? We are conscious at the subtle level of something else entirely, whatever we may be dreaming about. So it's not unconsciousness, it's a different state of consciousness. So when the soul's consciousness is at the second level, is at the level subtle body, that is Swapna. When the soul's consciousness is drawn within itself, not even in the subtle body level, that is called as the Sushupti, deep sleep. It's something similar to, but it's deeper than, dreamless sleep. And then when the soul's consciousness is redirected, and the soul's consciousness is directed either to subtle body or gross body, it is directed in the world of matter. But if the soul's consciousness is directed in the opposite direction, in the world of spirit, towards God and towards the spiritual reality, that is called, that state of consciousness is called as Turiya, and it is also known as Samadhi. So those who are fixed in spiritual realization, captivated by spiritual reality, they are situated in the fourth state of consciousness. And Yudhishthira was saying, how is it that Krishna has entered into this fourth state of consciousness? And Krishna still remained silent, lost in another world. Yudhishthira became more, his amazement changed to feelings of reverence, and he said, "Oh Lord, if I am so fortunate, can I know what is it that you are meditating on?" Slowly, Krishna opened his eyes. His eyes reflected an extraordinary light and sweetness. Krishna turned towards Yudhishthira and spoke. He said, "That heroic warrior who defeated, that warrior who had defeated all the Kshatriyas in the world 21 times, that heroic warrior who single-handedly defeated all the Kshatriyas at the Swayamvar in Kashi, that heroic warrior who was not just a ruler but also a sage, who excelled in the knowledge of scripture as learned from the greatest of sages like Parashuram, Shukracharya and Brihaspati, that great person who, as long as he was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there was no chance for you to win. that great son of Ganga is in his final days and he is meditating on me with his heart and mind fixed completely on me. And as his heart and mind are fixed on me, they are attracting me to fix my heart and mind on him. It was on that great Bhishma that I was meditating, O Yudhishthir. So this is the bond of love between the Lord and the devotee. The devotee is meditating on the Lord and the Lord is meditating on the devotee. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Maite Teshu Chapyaham. Krishna says in 9.29 in the Bhagavad Gita, Maite, I am in the hearts of my devotees and my devotees are in me. Yudhishthir nodded, said, yes. O Krishna, it is time that we should go and see Bhishma. If you are so gracious, please come with us. Krishna nodded. He said that, yes. Soon that great Bhishma will depart from the world. And when he departs along with him, a vast, immeasurable ocean of knowledge and realization will depart. Let us dip into this ocean and quench our thirst as much as possible. Let us go forthwith to where that great son of Ganga is reclining. The Pandavas, in their chariots, went to battle of Kurukshetra. There, Bhishma was lying, surrounded by guards and Brahmins who were chanting mantras. Along with Yudhishthir, the ladies of the forest of the palace also came. And hundreds of citizens came along in a procession, all longing for one last glimpse of Bhishma. Pandavas descended from their chariot and went close to Bhishma. And they offered their respects. Bhishma opened his eyes and looked with love at all of them and smiled. And Krishna, when he turned towards Krishna, his eyes lit up and Krishna smiled. He said, how are you doing, O grandsire? It is inconceivable that with so many arrows protruding through your body that you live. No one but you could have accomplished such a feat of being alive amid such pain for so long. Bhishma spoke in a feeble, weak voice. Obeisances to you, O Divine Krishna. You are the Lord of the world. You have come to give me shelter in my last moments. Please instruct me. What should I do now? Krishna smiled and said, O Bhishma, I know of your devotion to me. That is why I have come to you. To give you my darshan at the last moment. And also, so that you can do one glorious service. Yudhishthir is here and he is lamenting because of the war that caused the deaths of so many people. Please instruct him and solace him. Bhishma spoke feebly. O Krishna, you are the spiritual master of all the worlds. How can I, a disciple, speak in the presence of the teacher? You should speak and all of us will hear. I cannot speak in your presence, O Krishna. Moreover, I am in great pain. My voice is weak. My body has lost all strength. My memory is fading away. I can't think. In such a situation, how can I speak, O Krishna? Please, you speak and I will hear. Krishna told, no, Bhishma. He said, it is you who are meant to instruct in this moment. Please, you speak. And as far as your pain is concerned, listen as I give you a blessing. From this moment till the end of your life, you will feel no pain, no hunger, no thirst, no anxiety. Your mind and consciousness will be as clear as they were in your youth. Your voice will be as resonant and as strong as it was when you are in the most vibrant of health. And as Krishna spoke this, flowers fell from the sky on Bhishma. And when Bhishma started speaking thereafter, his voice was changed. And Bhishma started speaking. And Bhishma spoke to Yudhishthira. Now Yudhishthir was lamenting how much everybody had suffered because of him and how Bhishma was also suffering. But Bhishma, he was so selfless that when he was on the arrow bed, he did not think about how I am suffering. He said, how inconceivable is, how heartbreaking it is that, oh Yudhishthir, you had to suffer so much, although you were virtue personified, although Bhima was the most formidable among all warriors, although Arjuna was the peerless of all archers, and although you had Krishna, the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune on your side, still you had to suffer. How is this possible? Your mother, she suffered when she became a widow, when she had to take care of all of you when you were just small babies, without the help of her husband. When you grew up, her suffering increased more seeing your suffering. How is it that she who was truthfulness and religiosity personified had to suffer like this? Bhishma phrased the very question that was there in the back of everyone's mind, and he answered himself. He said that, I consider it is all the way of time. Time has its own ways and it brings misery and happiness in the lives of different people. And the best way to deal with the effects of time is by being firm in the service of the Lord. The Lord has a plan for everyone, but we cannot understand that plan. But we just stick in doing what the Lord wants us to do. Then His glorious plan will be revealed to us and all auspiciousness will come. Therefore, tasyanu vihito rajan. Bhishma says, therefore, by that Lord's plan, now you have become the king. And all these people who are orphaned, they need a guardian, become their guardian. And then Bhishma gives his own example of how he had to fight on the side of evil, because that was the plan of the Lord. And although that plan was extremely difficult for him to follow, when he followed it, what was the result? He says, Tathape kanta bhakteshu pashya bhupanukampitam yanme syunstajata sakshat krishno darshanam agataha. He says, Tathapi, although the plan was very difficult, ekanta bhakteshu, I stayed fixed in devotion to the Lord. And then what was it? Result? He says, the such mercy the Lord is giving me. Pashya bhupanukampitam, pashya bhupa, O king, O protector of the earth, Bhupa, just see the mercy of that Lord. Yanme syunstajita sakshad, that when I am about to depart from this world, Krishna darshanam agataha, Krishna has come to give darshan. So Bhishma is not proud, he is saying that I was an unflinching pure devotee. He is glorifying bhakti and giving himself as an example. He says, anyone who practices unflinching devotion to the Lord will be rewarded in due course of time. And as an example of that, you see how the Lord is rewarding me by Himself coming in front of me to give me darshan at the last moment. And that Lord is no other than Krishna Himself. That Lord is Krishna and He wants you to become the king. Follow His will and become the king. Bhishma knew that this devotional explanation was what would pacify and energize the heart of Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir took heart and then he asked Bhishma about how he should rule as a king. And thereafter Bhishma spoke. Bhishma's instructions went on for 56 days and they comprise a massive part of the Mahabharata. The Shanti Parva and Anushasan Parva and the instructions in them are so exhaustive that they are almost as big as the main, as the number of pages narrating the main events of the Mahabharata. And Bhishma talked about especially Raja Dharma, the dharma of a king, how a king should rule. And then after elaborately speaking on this, then he noticed that the sun had come to the meridian. He knew now that the time for him to depart had come. He turned his head towards Krishna. He focused his mind and all his consciousness internally on Krishna. And that Lord, that great person who had spoken on hundreds of topics and had fought hundreds of wars and had deliberated on hundreds of subjects, now withdrew his consciousness from all those directions. Itimatirupakalpita vitrishna bhagvati sattvata pungave vibhumni. He took his consciousness from everything else and focused that on that one supreme lord, Bhagavati. And he started offering prayers. As he offered prayers, they are the most moving prayers. Bhishma remembered how Krishna was extremely beautiful. Nothing in the world could compare to his beauty. Tribhuvana kamanam tamala varanam ravikara gaur varambaram dadhane vapurala kakula vritane nabjam vijaya sakhera tirastu menavadya. He says, Tribhuvana kamanam, no one in all the three worlds is as beautiful as Krishna. He wears yellow garments and his own body is effulgent and shining. And such a lord, may he always be on the path of my eyes. And then he especially remembered that pastime in which he was most intimately related with the Lord, the pastime of fighting with the Lord. He remembered Krishna as Vijayasaka, as the charioteer of Arjuna. And then he remembered especially that glorious event on the ninth day when Krishna, in order to protect Arjuna, had jumped off the chariot, picked up a chariot wheel and charged towards him to kill him. That had been the highest moment of his life. And he remembered the wounds on the face of Bhishma, on the face of Krishna. He remembered Krishna's expression and he remembered how he had reciprocated love with the Lord in that extraordinary way. And after remembering these intimate moments, he remembered other glorious moments. He remembered how Krishna had been adorned as the Agrapuruj, had received the worship as the greatest person in the Rajasuya Yajna that Yudhishthira had performed. Then he remembered the most treasured of all pastimes, the pastimes of the gopis of Vrindavan. In fact, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where this departure of Bhishma is narrated also, there in the ninth chapter of the first canto, Bhishma speaking about the gopis is the first reference to the gopis in the Bhagavatam. And Bhishma remembered how those gopis had become completely mad with love for Krishna. And unmadandha, blinded by divine madness. And though with those treasured memories, the memories of his most intimate interactions with the Lord, the Lord's glorification in this world, and the memories of this most exalted devotees, treasuring all these memories in his heart, he offered one final obeisances. That Lord who is present in the hearts of everyone, that Lord who is the well-wisher of everyone, I offer obeisances to him. And speaking thus, he became silent. His eyes closed. And the sages saw over there a shining light piercing through his forehead and shooting up towards the sky. It entered into the effulgence around Krishna's body and disappeared. They knew that Bhishma had attained the highest abode in the spiritual world, never to return back to this world. After a moment of silence, the celestials started showering flowers, drums started being beaten. Although it was a moment of lamentation, it was also a moment of celebration. Yes, the great soul had departed from the world, but the great soul had departed to the greatest destination, and that was an occasion for celebration. The Pandavas took the body of Bhishma and a majestic funeral procession worthy of the greatest of kings, they took him to the funeral pyre. And with Yudhishthira, the only surviving son of Dhritarashtra, holding a golden parasol on the head, an umbrella on the head, Bhima and Arjuna fanning the head on the two sides, Yudhishthira and Dhritarashtra fanning the feet on both sides, they stood around Bhishma. And as the priests were chanting mantras, one of the priests gave the lit log to Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira lit the body, and within moments the whole body was consumed into flames. And in this way Bhishma departed from the world. And Bhishma's departure is exemplary among all departures in this world, because it is the perfection, everybody has to die in this world. But the perfection is not to avoid death or to evade death. That is not possible for anyone. But the perfection is to die in such a way that one will never have to die again. And that happens when one remembers Krishna at the time of death. Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram. Krishna says that if somebody remembers me at the time of death, that person will return back to me. And we all practice chanting the holy names, hearing the pastimes, taking darshan of the deities, associating with the devotees. By all these we practice so that we can cultivate inner remembrance of Krishna. We make a habit of remembering Krishna throughout our life so that we can remember at the moment of death. And the Lord Himself comes, is right in front of us at the moment of death to help us remember. What more greater fortune can be there than that? For millennia, Bhishma's departure has been held as the standard that everyone aspires for, not just in terms of demanding the presence of the Lord, but also in aspiring for the consciousness of devotion, surrender and absorption in the Lord that Bhishma demonstrated. Such was the grandsire Bhishma's life, a great life and a great departure. Thank you very much.